Now, since this is the Sunday right after Thanksgiving, I want to talk about Thanksgiving. It's, after all, a very biblical concept. I want to start by looking at this passage in Luke, and then we're going to share some practical ideas on Thanksgiving. Now, if during the message you are thinking of some things that you're just very thankful for right now in this season, and you want to share them, you can go ahead and put them in the chat, and then at the end of the message, we'll have Alana maybe share some of those out. But if there's something you're thankful for, just go ahead and put it in the chat. All right, let me read from Luke 17, starting in verse 11. Now, on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." When he saw them, he said, "Go show yourself to the priest." As they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, "Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Rise and go. Your faith has made you well." So starting in verse 11, it just says Jesus is traveling on his way to Jerusalem. Now, within the context of the book of Luke, Jesus has been traveling for some time. He's trying to make his way back to Jerusalem. And in the context of Luke, he's been traveling for a while. But now he's between Samaria and Galilee, almost back to Jerusalem. But then in verse 12, it says that as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. Now, they would have met him outside of the village, not in the village, okay? And it says that they stood at a distance. Now, we got to understand a little bit of the background here. The Greek word used here in this verse is for various skin diseases, not necessarily just leprosy. But now, why the gang of 10 lepers? Why, that would almost feel a little intimidating, wouldn't it, to have these 10 guys, all who leprosy coming after you? Well, because of the social ostracism and religious laws of the day, lepers would seek out others with the same or similar disease to hang out with. They would even associate with people they wouldn't normally associate with just to have some community because they were lepers. In this particular case, we're going to see here in a few verses that 9 of these 10 were Jews and 1 was a Samaritan. Now, we know that Jews and Samaritans didn't get along. So these guys would not have naturally or normally hung out together. But the 9 Jews and the 1 Samaritan are gathered simply because they have some sort of skin disease, perhaps leprosy. It was often said that the isolation was worse than the disease, so they kind of had to stick together in these groups. So again, they would come together and they would form groups across normal, natural bounds so they would have some friendship and some community, because otherwise they were to stay completely apart. It also says that they stood at a distance from Jesus. Again, this was because they were not allowed to come near or approach healthy people. Wow, that kind of sounds like coronavirus, doesn't it? Like we're not supposed to get near anybody. Well, that's in the day of leprosy, if you had leprosy, you were not allowed to come anywhere near a healthy person. So they were following the laws and they were staying at a distance from Jesus. Then in verse 13, it says that they called out in a loud voice, "Jesus, have pity on us." They were calling out to Jesus because, again, they had kept a distance of what was required of them. And they were actually required by law to call out in a loud voice that they had leprosy. So imagine this. In that day, anywhere you go, any way you walk, you have to call out, "I'm a leper, I'm a leper, I'm a leper." You constantly have to be calling out in a loud voice that you're a leper so that anyone else around knows so they can stay away from you. Again, it almost feels like a little bit like coronavirus, where we're wearing a mask everywhere we go now and people avoid us. But these lepers had obviously heard of Jesus and are now desperately seeking his help. The grammatical structure here is such in the Greek that it shows real urgency to their request. This was it's an ongoing call to get Jesus' attention. They didn't just call out once, they're continuing to call out to Jesus to get his attention. But the word used here is mercy in the verb form. They're asking Jesus to have mercy on them. It could really be seen as, "Be merciful to us, be merciful to us." They weren't used to mercy, they were only used to rejection. Now in verse 14 it says, when, when he saw them, he said, "Go show yourselves to the priest." And as they went, they were cleansed. Jesus responds with what might seem like an odd instruction to us. But we need to understand, again, the culture and history of their day. You see, it was the job of the priest to diagnose leprosy and to declare lepers clean. So if someone had some kind of a skin disease, they would actually go to the priest and he would say, "Yes, you have leprosy. You're now forbidden from coming into the city. You must go out. You must stay away." And if somehow somebody miraculously did get healed, which almost never happened, then the priest could declare that they were now cleansed and healed and they could come back into society. So Jesus understands that. He understands that's all part of the culture and the tradition. So in keeping with that custom of the day, Jesus sends them to the priests. So Jesus, in doing this, he's actually following the law. He's following the law according to the day when he sends them to the priests. This was the only way for them to re-enter society. They needed a declaration from the priest that they were cleansed and healed in order to be re-entered into society. So in this command to go show themselves to the priest, Jesus is doing two things. He is providing the physical healing that they need, and second, he's making a way for them to be restored back into society. So we see not only Jesus' immediate compassion to heal them, but he also desires to see their lives restored. So he sends them to the priest so that a normal life might resume. There is also a huge element of faith here at play for these lepers because they're told to go to the priest before they're healed. These men acted with great faith, somehow knowing that in the going, Jesus was going to do something good. But there was also a lot of risk that went with this according to their culture of the day. They had to enter town to go show themselves to the priest. They had to enter the town, which they were not allowed to do. They had to enter the temple or synagogue, which they were not allowed to do. And what if they weren't healed? What if they get to the temple or synagogue? What if they get to the priest and they're not healed? They could have been killed. If they simply show up and they still have raging skin disease, the priest could have ordered that they be stoned. So it was a great risk and a great act of faith. Now, there's an interesting side note here, because unlike other leprosy healings that Jesus did, for example, the one in Luke 5:13, where Jesus touches the unclean leper in order to heal them, here he never touches them. He simply gives them the command to go show yourself to the priest and exercise faith. So this one, he simply says to go. The one in Luke 5, he touches them and they're healed. I think there's two takeaways from these differences. First, no two healings are ever the same. God is at work in different ways in different people with different circumstances. Can't look for a formula for how God likes to work. And number two, sometimes Jesus will ask us to exercise faith before the supernatural kicks in. This verse then concludes that says, by saying that as they went, they noticed they were healed. I love this. Now the verb structure, they were cleansed, is in a passive voice in the Greek. Greek grammar alert. You know how I like to geek out on the Greek grammar, especially when it's in a passive voice. Remember, in the passive voice, the action of the verb happens to the subject without any volition on the part of the subject. And that's what happened here. As they went, they noticed they were healing. The healing happened to them. So you could literally render this as they went, healing came upon them. So they're going, they're walking to see the priest, and bam, the healing just comes on them. They didn't have anything to do with it. Verse 15, one of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. Now, if you were healed from leprosy, you would have noticed right away, this wasn't a, am I healed, am I not healed, I can't tell right now, I'm not feeling any pain. You would have noticed if you were healed from leprosy. But only one comes back to Jesus. Now, the word translated here as praising God means to bring glory, glorifying God. It's actually the Greek word from where we get our English word doxology. So the man came back and brought a doxology. Now, if you have ever been in a traditional church, a mainline traditional church, they will sing a short little song called the doxology. And think about it. Again, I'm stretching the analogy here a little bit, but this Greek word means doxology, and the doxology that we used to sing starts out with, "Praise God, from whom all blessings flow." That's what this man did. He comes back, and he's praising God, and he's acknowledging that all blessings come from God. Now, the previous verse has a plural pronoun indicating that more than one was healed. And in verse 17, Jesus makes it very clear that all 10 were healed. But only this man goes beyond the physical healing to see the hand of God and comes back bringing glory to God, still in a loud voice. I love that because, again, as a leper, they had to constantly cry out in a loud voice, "I'm a leper, I'm a leper." Now he comes back in a loud voice giving doxology, giving praise. This is the heart and spirit level response when someone comes that close to the living God. I've seen that a few times when someone got dramatically touched by God or got healed, and they would literally just fall down and begin to cry out in a loud voice because they knew that God had come near. With this one man's statement here, there is also the idea of thanksgiving. He comes back and gives a doxology, brings praise and glory to God, but within that we can certainly see the concept of thanksgiving as well. But where are the others? Verse 16, he threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. There it is, point blank, thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. He now comes right up and throws himself at Jesus' feet, ignoring the requirements of a leper to keep at a distance. He has total faith that he has been healed in order to now throw himself at Jesus' feet. And this thanksgiving ignores cultural norms and becomes actually a bit extravagant. The verb actually means to throw himself on his face. In verse 16 in the NIV it says, he threw himself on his face. That's literally what the Greek verb means, to throw oneself on their face. The NASU translation says, and he fell on his face. I actually prefer the NIV because it says he threw himself on his face. This is the kind of thanksgiving that doesn't care what others think. He wasn't worried about what anyone else was going to think. He had been healed, and he was giving extravagant praise and thanksgiving to Jesus. But now, of course, the story takes a shocking twist. I love to point out how Jesus loves to shock his audience with what he says. Here, Luke, the writer, frames this in a way to be shocking to his readers. Because at the very end of the verse, he just says, oh, and by the way, he's a Samaritan. Luke seems to leave this detail to the end of the story to add dramatic effect. Now, of course, as I already mentioned, remember how much the Jews and the Samaritans tended to hate each other and not get along very well. So it's shocking that the Samaritan would have asked for Jesus' help in the first place, a good Samaritan boy coming to a Jewish rabbi for help. And to then to be the only one to return and bring glory and praise and thanksgiving to God, even more shocking. Luke's readers would have just been stunned at hearing all of this. Then in verse 17, Jesus asks, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? So Jesus makes it very clear that all 10 were healed. His power was not somehow limited to just this one. So Jesus asked the obvious question, where are the others? And just like the parable of the good Samaritan that Jesus tells, here the Samaritan is the good guy. But this is an actual event. This is something that actually happened, and Luke is recording the event, whereas the parable of the good Samaritan was just a parable. It was a story that Jesus was making up. So here we have an actual event where the Samaritan is the good guy. And obviously this is also a stinging indictment to the others for their lack of faithfulness and recognition of God's mercy. Verse 18, so the one man has come back. Now picture this, you got to get an idea of this. The man has come running back, and in a loud voice, he's thrown himself at Jesus' feet. He's praising God. He's thanking Jesus. And this is how Jesus responds. Verse 18, was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner? And it gets worse. The word translated as foreigner, that Greek word, when it was used in the Septuagint, it means pagan or heathen. So Jesus didn't exactly receive the guy with all flowery, lovey-dovey language. He comes back, he's like, was this pagan the only one to come back and worship me? It's not stated, but of course the implication is that the other 9 were Jews. By the way, Jesus points out that this guy is a pagan heathen. Now this same word appears on the signs prohibiting foreigners from passing the inner barrier of the temple. So when you went to the temple, the foreigners, the non-Jews, couldn't enter. And so they used this word, no foreigners allowed past this point. That's the word that Jesus uses here. Was this foreigner, was this pagan the only one to come back and to give me praise and thanksgiving? This is the word that says you cannot come to God. In the temple, that's what the word meant. You can't come to God here in this place because you're not a Jew. And when Jesus sees the man, he uses that same word. He's really kind of putting him off almost. But when you think about it, the one who was furthest from God was the only one to return and give thanks and praise. Often the ones who are closest to God take God for granted. Didn't they all have the same thing to be thankful for? Then in verse 19, then he said to him, rise and go, your faith has made you well. So Jesus turns real quickly and now responds positively to him. The expression in the NIV of rise and go, your faith has made you well, should be seen as full salvation. The Greek word is really the word for saved. Your faith has saved you. Jesus uses the words to save and to heal interchangeably. And what's interesting, if you really study that, Jesus will say to one person, your faith has saved you. To another person, he'll say, your faith has healed you. And oftentimes when you think he should say you were healed, he says you are saved. And oftentimes when you think he would say you are saved, he says you are healed. Jesus sees healing and salvation as the same thing because he uses them interchangeably. And here the man was completely healed of his leprosy, but he says, go, you have been saved. But what saved this Samaritan, this pagan? Both the act of faith to go and the returning in thanksgiving are enough for Jesus to declare that this man was saved. Now, I want to put this into context for you for a little bit here. Leprosy, or again, this word could have referred to any skin disease, but probably leprosy. It was a cruel disease. First of all, it was painful. That's how you would have known that you were healed immediately, because the pain would have instantly gone. And it was pain over your whole body. Wherever this leprosy had affected your skin, you were in pain over your whole body. It smelled because your skin was rotting. So you had this horrible stench, this horrible smell about your body. It was also extremely contagious, so that you could not have contact with any healthy people or be around any healthy people. It was wildly contagious. And also, if you had leprosy, you were destined to be nothing but a beggar. You could have no serious employment. All you could do was sit on the street and beg. You were ostracized by all of society and culture and even your family. You would have no contact. You would have no family. You would live outside of the city in a village with other lepers. So it was extremely lonely. Now, it's from this that these 10 have now all been healed. You would have thought that there would have been a lot of room for thanksgiving and praise because they have now been free from all of that. Not just the pain and the physical smell, but because they were sent to the priest, he could now declare them clean and they could re-enter society. They could actually go home to their families. And to that, only one is willing to give thanks, even though they had so much to be thankful for. So let's think about some reasons why maybe we don't give thanks. Like, let's put ourselves momentarily in the shoes of the other 9. I think oftentimes we can take God for granted. In a case like this, we can just think, well, that's God's job, right? He's supposed to heal people. He did what he's supposed to do. Does our faith at times cause us to take God for granted? Remember, it was the Jews who didn't come back. It was the Samaritan who did. Does our faith cause us to actually take God for granted? Number 2, not recognizing the work of God or chalking it up to coincidence. But in this case, there was no known cure. People didn't get well from leprosy, even though there was a provision for it in the book of Leviticus. It just didn't happen. And so you can't chalk this up to some kind of a coincidence. It was a remarkable thing that had happened. But do we do that? Do we not recognize the work of God and think it was something else? I've seen this. I've seen people receive dramatic physical healings in their body, and then just a short time later, they try to rationalize it away and say that it was something else. I had one person once that tried to tell me the doctors had just been wrong and they weren't really sick to begin with. Excuse me. Number 3, are we focusing on what didn't happen? Our expectations. We have an expectation. We have a need. And then we develop an expectation of how we think God will meet that need. Then God, like he, as he often likes to do, does something different. And now we have an unmet expectation. And now we have disappointment. And so we begin to focus on what didn't happen. Well, we pictured the healing would look like this. God did this, so we're focusing on the fact that he didn't do this, even though he did do this. I think focusing on what didn't happen can sometimes cause us to not give thanks. And here's the thing. If we focus on what didn't happen, then that's all we get. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you only focus on what didn't happen, then what didn't happen is all you get. Number four, a poverty mindset. What I received wasn't enough. This is related to the last one, but not the same. This is so common in our day. Something happened, but it wasn't enough. Maybe for these other nine, well, yes, they were physically healed, but their financial position wasn't restored either. They were still poor because they hadn't worked in so long. But it's something that we can easily fall into. God does something, but we were hoping for a little bit more. And so we fall into that poverty mindset, and then we focus on what didn't happen. Number five, failing to see the bigness of God in it. Having a no big deal attitude, or yeah, I was healed, whatever, no big deal. But can we see the bigness of God even when he does little things and give thanks for that? I remember a story years ago. I was praying for a woman here in the church who had some kind of a newly diagnosed chronic condition, and I don't remember what it was. But as part of her condition, the doctors had, I'm getting ahead of myself in the story. So she'd asked me to pray for her for this new condition that she had. So I'm praying for her, and as I'm praying for her healing, the Lord speaks to me and says, tell her that I see her hair. I'm like, that's really weird. I mean, that's going to seem almost a little like perverted or something. I mean, that's a little weird. But I was sure that I heard the Lord, and so I told the woman, I said, well, I feel like the God says he sees your hair. Then she explained to me that the doctors had told her because of this condition, not the treatment, it wasn't cancer and chemo, but because of this condition that she had, she would lose her hair. But the Lord just spoke to me and said, I see her hair. And in the end, she never did lose her hair. So God did something as small as saying, I see your hair. Can we be thankful when God does something small? In that moment, she wasn't healed. She did go on to recover, but she never lost her hair. And then number six, I think this is a huge one for many of us, number six, not being deliberate. We are thankful, but not taking the time to deliberately express that. Those other nine who didn't return, they may have been thankful, but they just weren't deliberate enough to come back and to give thanks. Yes, we're saved from our sins, but God also is investing in our life and doing things in our life down to the little details. If I see your hair, can we be deliberate about giving thanks for that? Because God cares about all of the little details of our life. You know, I heard an interesting story just last week. I had gone out to a state park to go for a hike. And while I'm hiking, I'm in another state. Amy and I had gone to Tennessee, and I'm hiking in Tennessee, and I meet another man from Illinois. And so we struck up a conversation, and he tells me, in this conversation, he tells me that he had recently gone on a missions trip to Haiti. And he goes, the thing that I was so struck by down in Haiti is how thankful they were for everything. They've got nothing, but they're so thankful. And then he tells me that he went to visit this one particular church, and the pastor got up and prayed this long, heartfelt prayer about how thankful he was that God had created the apple. Now, the guy telling me the story was very careful to say he didn't have an apple. It's not like he was holding up an apple and saying, God, thank you that you've given me this apple as provision. No, he didn't actually have an apple. He was just saying, I'm so thankful that you've created the apple. That's thankful in the little things that we wouldn't normally think of. And sometimes, honestly, we just get too busy to be thankful, don't we? And so we're not deliberate about being thankful because we're too busy. And of course, we need to be thankful as a way of life, being deliberately thankful, not just this week because it's Thanksgiving week holiday in the U.S. All right, so what can we do? What are some things that we can do to overcome maybe a lack of thankfulness? The first one I would suggest is focus even on the small things. Don't take anything for granted. All blessings come from Him, right? Focus on what did happen, not on what didn't happen. That's why I actually started my Monday thankful email many years ago now. I actually think I started it in 2017. Now I call it my Monday musings, but the first part of it is always what I'm thankful for. I did that to help myself overcome spending too much time focusing on what didn't happen. So by being thankful and focusing on what did happen, it helped me move away from only focusing on what didn't happen. Now, I want to show you something else here that I think is so cool and amazing. Thanksgiving can change the atmosphere. You know, I talk about our spiritual atmosphere all the time. Thanksgiving can change our spiritual atmosphere. I want to read to you a verse from Ephesians and then show how Thanksgiving can affect this. Ephesians 2, verse 1, as for you, you were dead in your transgressions and sins. Well, we can be thankful that we're now no longer. In which you used to live when you followed the ways of the world and of the ruler of the kingdom of the air, the spirit who is now at work in those who are disobedient. All of us who lived among them at one time gratifying the cravings of our flesh. So Paul says, back before we were saved, before we knew Jesus, we used to live and we followed the ways of the world and the ruler of the kingdom of the air. Now, of course, that's referring to Satan, right? But what's interesting, because he says ruler of the air, and I was really intrigued by that, so I looked it up. I did a word study. In the Greek, it's the word for atmosphere, but it's actually the word for lower atmosphere because there's upper atmosphere and lower atmosphere. We live in the lower atmosphere. But Paul here in this verse says, Satan rules the lower atmosphere where we live. This is his kingdom, this is his world, and he rules in it. But we live in that same atmosphere, don't we? Now, think about what kind of atmosphere that would be. If Satan rules over the lower atmosphere, what kind of atmosphere is that going to be? Well, Satan comes to steal, kill, and destroy, and he is never thankful, and he always wants us to have a spirit of poverty. So that's the atmosphere we end up living in. We live in an atmosphere of killing, stealing, and destroying and ungratefulness. But we can change the lower atmosphere ruled by Satan by simply giving thanksgiving, right? As we give thanksgiving, it will actually dispel the presence and the power of Satan in this atmosphere that we live in. Do you see that? Do you follow that? So if we need to change our atmosphere, simply giving praise and thanksgiving will push out the influence and the effect of Satan in this lower atmosphere. So if you're in a really yucky atmosphere and you need to change that, just start giving thanksgiving, and it will change the atmosphere because it is so counter to Satan. Thanksgiving must also go beyond just being personal. It must also be corporate as a people. I want to show you something really amazing in Nehemiah. In the book of Nehemiah, chapter 12, verse 8, it says there that there was a man named Mattaniah who with a team of people were in charge of keeping the songs of thanksgiving. Now think about this. They had so many songs of thanksgiving that Mattaniah and a team of people were charged with keeping these songs. But I want you to think about what life was like. Remember, this is in the book of Nehemiah. They were trying to rebuild, right? A small group, a small remnant had been allowed to re-inhabit the land, and they were trying to rebuild. But it also tells us that they would lay bricks and work with one hand and keep a sword in the other hand because the land was not yet safe. And so they literally had to keep a sword in this hand and work with this hand. So it was not easy times. This was not a wonderful, glorious time. This was still a very trying time in a very unsafe environment. And yet they were so thankful that Mattaniah and his team had to keep the songs of thanksgiving. But it also shows that corporate thanksgiving was a big part of community life and worship for the Hebrews. So they would get together and they would sing these songs of thanksgiving as a corporate, as a whole body of people, that whole remnant that had returned to rebuild. Now, we must also think about thanksgiving as a way of life, not just because this week is Thanksgiving. I would actually encourage you to set up a specific time in the week to do some thankfulness work. Again, like I do with my Monday morning thankfulness email. Either Sunday night or Monday morning, I sit down and I spend some time, and I try to make that list as long as I can. I don't always make it very long, but I really work to try to make that list as long as I can. But it's a deliberate time weekly to be thankful, and I try to look for the little things that happened that I can be thankful for. I would encourage you to do something similar. Have a set time of being thankful as part of your relationship with God. There's a new song I've been hearing lately. In fact, I might send you the link in my Monday email. There's a line in the song that says, "Let there never be a day that I do not rise and give you praise." What a great idea. Now, thanksgiving can also be more than words. If you do a careful study throughout the Old Testament of thankfulness, there were many, many sacrifices that were for thanksgiving. So if they were thankful for something, they could come to the temple and they could offer a certain sacrifice of thanksgiving. There's tons and tons of thanksgiving sacrifices listed in the Old Testament. For us today, we could give thanksgiving through a financial donation of some kind. We could give thanksgiving through serving. And of course, we can give thanksgiving through worship. But in some way, in some form, be deliberate about giving thanksgiving. Now, I want to close with this. I recently read a blog from Kerry Newhoff. He's a pastor that writes extensively now on Christian and pastoral leadership. And he wrote this blog. I just want to read a little bit of it because I think it's so powerful. The name of the blog was Five Crucial Ways That Your Gratitude Impacts Your Attitude as a Leader. Now, I'm not going to read all five. I'm just going to read three because I think they really lend themselves to what I've been talking about here today. The first one that he mentioned, he says, your overall gratitude impacts your overall attitude. A grateful leader tends to be a great leader. An ungrateful leader, well, never is. I find when my gratitude is high, I just lead better. I'm kinder and more compassionate. I'm less resentful and less suspicious. Your overall gratitude impacts your overall attitude, so be grateful. His number two is this. A grateful leader sees opportunities others miss. I believe a grateful attitude is tied to an abundance mentality. I'm a firm believer in abundance thinking. Why? If we have a God who created everything we see out of nothing and who rose after he died, he can accomplish anything through me, without me, and in spite of me. If he uses me, wow, that's amazing. Being grateful for what you have is tied in a meaningful way to thinking abundantly about the future. Why? Well, an ungrateful mind tends to translate what hasn't happened into what can't happen and what won't happen and what will never happen. A grateful mind thinks about everything that happened, give thanks, and trust even greater things can happen, will happen, and should happen. A grateful leader will almost always find the path to an abundant future. And for the realists out there who are thinking, well, grateful thinking isn't going to change anything, few people said it better than Henry Ford when he said, whether you believe you can or whether you believe you can't, you're right. As a leader, what you think determines what you do. And when it comes to volunteers, gratitude is pretty much all your volunteers run on. The best leaders realize that even their employees are, at their core, volunteers. Every capable person could work somewhere else. And number five, gratitude neutralizes your anger and jealousy. Grateful people are rarely angry, and angry people are rarely grateful. Ditto with jealous people. Cultivating gratitude will make you far less angry. You will realize no one owes you anything, and it will make you far less jealous because you'll realize God has given you everything that you need. Want to be less angry and less jealous? Stay on your knees long enough to be grateful. And that, again, that was all from Kerry Newhoff. All right. So what are we grateful for this morning? Alana, do we have any great things in the chat that we can share? All right, if anybody wants to chat in something that they're grateful for, go ahead and do it. Robin, unmute yourself.
It's the same today as it was way back in the day.
Amen.